Christian School, elementary and secondary students. They are here with the Court with Class program that is run by the State Bar and the Supreme Court. We are delighted to welcome you, and we hope you find this informative and interesting. You students will be joined at noon by Waukesha South High School students and will meet with Justice Steinmetz. So, will we have the Berlin High School students rise, please? Please stand. Thank you. Welcome. You may be seated. And we'll have the Faith Christian School students stand, please. They are elementary and secondary school students, right?
There are no elementary
of us. Okay, that's why I'm questioning that. Looks like secondary. Thank you. And
like
the teacher.
College students, if I'm not mistaken.
Please be seated. Now that you have been introduced to us, I would like to introduce the court to you. On the far left is Justice David Prosser. Seated next to him is Ann Walsh Bradley. Seated to Justice Bradley's right is Justice William Babbage. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate right is Justice Donald Steinmetz. To his right is Justice John Wilcox. And to the far right is Justice Patrick Crooks. With those introductions made, I will call the second case for today.
Chief,
before you do that, I, as some of you may know, am a former Marathon County Circuit Court judge. I note that in the reply brief, an issue as to the clarity or ambiguity of a Marathon County court rule was raised. I don't have any independent recollection of this court rule, and I intend to sit on this case. However, I want to advise counsel that in looking at the appendix, it appears that the court rules third edition were July 1995. That was after I left Marathon County Bench, but the rule that is cited in the appendix gives as a source order 12-80, which of course was before I got on the bench. But nevertheless, I want to advise you that I was on the Marathon County Bench apparently during the time that this rule was in effect. If either counsel have any objection, please, of my sitting on this case, if you would notify in writing the court within 3 days. Okay. 97-1867, Daniel D. Drow versus David H. Schwartz. Pamela McGee, Assistant Attorney General, representing David H. Schwartz.
Thank you, Your Honor. If I may, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. May it please the court, my name is Pamela McGee. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the State Justice Department, and I'm appearing this morning in behalf of the petitioners in this case, David Schwartz, who is Administrator of the Division of Hearings and Appeals, and the petitioner, the division itself. This case is about the judicial review process for probation and parole revocations. Specifically, it's about whether a petition for certiorari, which is the proper writ for a judicial review of revocation decisions, must be assigned to the particular branch of the circuit court in which a revokee was convicted, or may it merely be filed in any branch of the circuit court in the county where the revokee was convicted.
Does that mean it's branch, what it says, or does it have to go back to the original judge?
Well, the Court of Appeals specifically indicated in a footnote that this did not necessarily mean that it had to go back to the particular judge, but rather to the branch. The Court of Appeals, however, did hold that the petition for writ of certiorari must be assigned to the particular branch of the circuit court which sentenced the revokee. And the state disagrees with that. The state takes the position that any branch of the circuit court in the county of conviction should be allowed to rule on a petition for certiorari when judicial review of a revocation decision is requested. When the way that a revocation decision may come to for judicial review is that, of course, when a probationer or parolee is under the supervision of the Department of Corrections, they are subject to certain rules and conditions of supervision, and when they violate those rules, they are subject to revocation. The final revocation hearing is heard by the Division of Hearings and Appeals. And there is an administrative review process, and that is to the administrator of the Division of Hearings and Appeals. If the revocation is affirmed on administrative review, the revokee has the opportunity to have a judicial review, and that is by a petition for a writ of certiorari, which is, of course, a civil proceeding, and the judicial review is limited to the record of the administrative body. The probationer in this case, Daniel Drow, was convicted of certain offenses in the Circuit Court for Marathon County, Branch 2, and the presiding judge in that branch withheld sentence and placed Drow on probation. His probation was revoked, and the revocation was affirmed on administrative appeal. Drow filed a petition for review, a petition for certiorari for review, and the petition for the writ of certiorari was heard by Branch 3 in Marathon County Circuit Court.
Could I ask a question? How do you file a writ?
Well, they're filed in presumably with the clerk of court in a particular circuit.
Where can't go right to a judge?
Not to my knowledge.
No. Aren't they that you take your filing to the clerk's office and the next judge up on the list of assignments gets the case?
Well, no, that varies from circuit to circuit.
That's what it was in Milwaukee.
Well, right, and then in other circuits, there are particular rules. I was able to do a review of several of the different circuits, and there are a variety of ways that those are assigned. And so that's, in Marathon County, had a very specific rule, but other circuits may assign them to the judge that a post-conviction motion to the judge that heard it previously, but if that judge isn't available, it goes by regular tab or the regular assignment system in that particular circuit.
So the basis for this having it going back to the branch would be that it might be that the judge there, he or she would have the familiarity with this particular issue. But, I mean, that might be one reason for doing it, but in today's court, today's single-level trial court, you could have A, somebody else sitting there, B, someone gone. I mean, it seems to me that the concern would be over the flexibility that would be allowed to the court system by being regimented or having that particular branch.
That's exactly right, and moreover, the reason that you set forth might not be quite as compelling in an administrative review, because the review has to be directly of the record. There's no additional fact-finding. There's only just a review of the administrative record that has been brought up from the administrative agency, and of course that record is just as easily, we would set forth just as easily reviewed by the one judge as another.
Ms. McKee, why should we make this complicated? Johnson versus Katie basically says that probation revocation is to be reviewed. It's to be reviewed by the device of a petition for a writ of certiorari. And the language is certiorari directed to the court of conviction. Wouldn't most people think that was the branch?
Well, I have to indicate that Johnson was decided many years ago. And almost 30 years ago, and I couldn't The state's position is that there are two ways that this can be looked at, that the language can be looked at in two separate ways. If it's to the court of conviction, that, in our view, would mean the circuit court of conviction as opposed to several other possibilities. But since 1971, many counties which had only a single branch have since that time added many branches. There are other considerations to take into account.
Let me, if I might, ask you another question. Do you think it's significant that when Johnson versus Cady was decided in 1971, that there were two levels of trial court, county courts and circuit courts?
I do believe that that particular situation does support the position that the state is taking.
Why?
Well, because the Johnson court may very well have been indicating that because certain criminal cases were heard in the county court, certain criminal cases were heard in the circuit court at that time, that review of the petition for certiorari would be to whichever of those two might have entered the conviction to begin with. Of course, that is another situation that is no longer in effect and points up, in addition, some of the changes that have occurred since the time that this was considered. Of course, now branches in particular counties have specialized calendars, such as juvenile calendars, drug calendars, and various circuit courts have developed different assignments and rotation systems. Not all of them are the same. Each circuit develops its own within the context of the overall rules of supervision by this court. And the decision of the Court of Appeals, we would put forth, interferes with the ability of the circuit courts to efficiently manage their often overwhelming caseloads. As you mentioned, in Milwaukee County, as in some other counties, judges, along with their designated circuit court branch numbers, may rotate on a biannual basis from criminal assignments to juvenile assignments to civil assignments, and their branch numbers follow them as they rotate. The decision of the Court of Appeals would require that petitions for writs of certiorari be sent to branches which may no longer have anything to do with criminal cases. The judge who presided over the original conviction may no longer even be on the bench. And these circumstances affect and effectively erase any meaningful purpose for having a particular branch review the record of the administrative agency.
I can tell you from experience also with the rotation of judges as in Milwaukee County, that when you're sitting as a civil judge with a jury trial going on, and they bring you a probation to see if you should be sentenced or not, that caused a great deal of time waste.
And disruption in disruption. The ongoing process.
Tell me what the state wants. I couldn't quite get that from the brief, and I may have just missed it. What do you think the rules should be? Now you got, this is a multi-judge county, right? Marathon.
Right.
All right. And Judge A does the sentencing, all right? Now, several years pass, and there's a revocation, all right? Judge A may be sitting in civil instead of criminal. What does the state, where does the state want that writ to go? Maybe they have a tab system, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Maybe they have criminal... we're talking about the whole state now, really. Maybe they have divisions, criminal and civil,
yes.
Felony, misdemeanor.
Yes.
What does the state think this language means and should mean?
Well, that's a very important point in terms of the differences that are between each circuit. And I think that it is important that in view of the complexity of these caseloads, that the circuits have the ability to be able to deal with their caseloads within the context of the numbers of cases, the various types of courts that may have particular types of calendars, and that therefore they should have the ability to make their own rules to deal with this, their own assignment rules, as long as they don't conflict with rules of this court in terms of how various circuits should attend.
So you want the circuits to or districts to decide for themselves?
Our position would be that that was the original intent of this particular language, but in view of all the changes, if that wasn't the intent of that language, but now, because of all the complexity of the court system, that it should be taken a look at in the context of today's...
Wait, what do you do in Milwaukee County? If I understand Milwaukee County, the judge has the same branch number, whether they're in children's court or juvenile court. So the branch number stays. Do you want Milwaukee County to decide for itself which judge gets this this issue?
Within the overall rules of the administration of that particular circuit, my answer would be yes.
And Dane County could use a different technique?
As long as it doesn't conflict with rules that this court has set forth for the administration of the various circuits. So, and they do use different techniques in many different situations in terms of the way cases are assigned.
So you're not advocating it goes back to the original judge?
If the circuit court thinks that that's important that it happen and that it should go back to the original judge, then it that should be what their rule is. Well, I'm not advocating any particular individual.
You're just advocating that it's okay.
Right.
Do it. All right.
If you were writing this opinion, and you came to that point in the opinion that where we say, we hold that, what would you say? What's your rule?
That each circuit may develop its own rules for assignments of cases as long as they do not conflict with rules of this court.
Now, we usually do that by means of a court rule.
Right.
After a public hearing and consideration.
Right.
You want us to do the same thing here in a case? This is a case being decided. You want us to establish a new rule in a case decision?
No, not necessarily. Only to say that the circuit courts can establish their rules pursuant to whatever proceeding that is undertaken in order to develop these rules of administration within the individual counties and their circuits.
So you're talking about counties, right? Not circuits.
Right.
Each county may develop.
Doesn't the petitioner have some interest here?
Well, I fail to see what that interest might be because it's a review of the record. It's not a new fact-finding situation. It's a very limited review of the administrative record, and court judicial reviews of administrative records are, of course, limited to whether or not the decision has been arbitrary and capricious and several other standards.
Ms. McGee, you're not suggesting that the petitioner could select whatever circuit across the state he or she wanted, are you?
No, because it's very clear that it's supposed to go back to the court of conviction, as opposed to, for example, a habeas petition, which goes to the court where in the county where the petitioner is incarcerated. It's clear that the one thing that is specifically clear from the language that we're looking at here is that it goes back to the court of conviction.
In the particular county.
I'm sorry.
In the particular county.
Yes.
Not shifting counties, but within that particular
exactly.
County.
Exactly. Exactly.
Could Mr. Drow have moved for a substitution of judge?
I would say that he could have. He was represented by counsel at the trial court level, and then he proceeded pro se on the appeal. But there was no request appears by record to have his petition taken back to Branch 2.
He was convicted in Branch 2, and then in the petition he went to Branch 3.
Correct.
Could he have moved to substitute out of Branch 3?
I would assume so, unless there was something in the rule there that would prohibit that, yes.
Did he request Branch 2?
The record doesn't reflect any specific request.
I don't think anybody would recognize a request. He could just file against the judge, that's it. And then whatever the circumstances are in that county, it would be assigned to somebody else.
Did the petitioner in this case in any way petition for Branch 2 to hear the petition rather than Branch 3?
No, not to my knowledge, not according to the record. And as a matter of fact, He went back to Branch 2 to be sentenced after the certiorari was decided. A second procedural concern with the decision of the Court of Appeals in this matter is its potential effect not only on assignments of petitions for writs of certiorari in probation and parole cases, but also in other proceedings where this language may be utilized. For example, the section 343.31 sub 4 provides that proceedings for reinstatement of licenses should be heard by the court of conviction. The Court of Appeals opinion would apparently require that the proceeding for reinstatement of licenses be heard in the particular branch of the circuit court where the offender had had his license suspended. The impact of requiring a specific branch to receive assignment of reinstatement cases or revocation review cases or of any other cases that may be affected by the Court of Appeals decision as to the interpretation of this language, regardless of whether there is a current caseload assignment that precludes that in the particular branch, or whether it is otherwise set forth in the rules of that particular court, could be adverse to the ability of the circuit court to manage its caseload effectively. Apart from policy considerations, there's nothing in the language of the statute which establishes the jurisdiction of the circuit court that requires that assignment of certiorari petitions be made to the particular branch of the circuit court of conviction. The jurisdictional statute provides that, of course, each branch of each circuit court has all of the authority necessary to hear all cases. The venue statute provides only that venue for petitions for certiorari must be filed in the county where the probationer was last convicted of an offense for which he was on probation or parole. Finally, insofar as the actual language in Johnson is concerned, it does not specifically refer to the particular branch of the circuit court where the revokee was convicted. On the other hand, it doesn't specifically refer to the circuit court in the county of conviction. However, as we had discussed earlier, there were two levels of courts at the time Johnson was decided, and that may have well impacted on the language that was used in that case. And also, as I mentioned earlier, maybe distinguishing, having established certiorari as the proper writ for addressing a revocation because of revocations being civil proceedings, indicating that, therefore, a regular certiorari review in the county of conviction, I mean, in the court of conviction would take place, as opposed to, as I mentioned earlier, a habeas petition, which would take place in the county of custody. The state would urge that the Court of Appeals has issued a decision which unnecessarily removes flexibility from the circuit courts to make the decisions about the best way to handle their caseloads. As I indicated earlier, the best way may differ from county to county. If this court agrees with the state's position, the various circuit courts would be able to respond to the needs generated by the size of their caseloads and the structure of the court system in that particular county. Therefore, the state urges this court to conclude that a petition for certiorari to review a revocation is to the circuit court in the county of conviction, and that they have the ability to make rules as dealing with their caseload assignments as long as those rules do not conflict with rules established by this court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McGee. Ms. McDavin, you are from the Frank J. Remington Center in Madison representing Daniel D. Groh.
That's correct. Good morning. My name is Amy McDavid, and I'm from the Frank J. Remington Center, and I represent the respondent, Daniel Groh. It is our position that the Court of Appeals ruled correctly that Mr. Groh's writ of certiorari should have been reviewed by the same branch in which he was convicted and sentenced to probation. This court can uphold this ruling on any of three grounds, which I'll briefly summarize before delving into them in greater detail. First, It's our position that Johnson v. Cady was clear in directing that certiorari review of probation revocations take place in the precise court of conviction, which is the branch where conviction took place. This position is supported by both common usage and statutory definition of the term court. Second, if this court finds that there is room for interpretation of the ruling in Johnson, the court should look to the policy considerations which support the lower court's reading of it. And third, the circuit court rules of Marathon County clearly dictate the results specified by the Court of Appeals. I'm going to begin with the third and narrowest argument. Because Marathon County specifically addressed this issue in its rules, this case is actually very simple to resolve. The Marathon County Circuit Court rules clearly state that writs of certiorari in criminal matters are to be heard by the sentencing court. As was noted before, Mr. Drew was convicted and sentenced in Branch 2, his cert petition was heard in Branch 3, and he was returned to Branch 2 for sentencing after revocation. This sequence of events violated the circuit court rules.
Ms. McDavid, was that argument ever presented at the courts below?
Well, there are a couple of things to be said. First of all, I believe the record reflects that this was actually filed in the particular branch. If you look at the paperwork there, Mr. Drew's attorney did file it in Branch 2. The court itself then seemed to shuffle it a couple of times during the course of this. Mr. Drew did raise the general issue of the fact that this was not heard in the correct branch in his pro se brief. And we are simply arguing an alternative argument to uphold his general issue.
He raised that issue at the Court of Appeals?
He raised the issue that, yes, his certiorari petition was not heard in the proper court, which is the issue as defined by the state in this petition.
But he didn't raise the issue of the Marathon County rules themselves.
Well, according to, under the definition of issue versus the definition of argument, this is an alternative argument to uphold the ruling of the Court of Appeals, and the issue is the general issue of whether this was heard in the proper branch in the circuit court, and we have two alternative arguments to support that issue.
And that would be your answer to the state's argument of waiver, is that correct?
Exactly. And I would point the court's attention to State versus Weber, which defines issue and it defines argument. And we clearly fall within that definition. Internal court rules of court procedure play an important part in the administration of justice. And it's well established that uncontradicted court rules have all the force of law. The Marathon County rules themselves use mandatory language, and they clearly direct that the circuit courts must adhere to their own rules. In fact, in order for the court rules to have any effect, the courts must enforce them. The state, in its reply brief, claimed that this circuit court rule was ambiguous, and I'd like to briefly address that issue. This rule says that writs of certiorari in criminal matters are to be directed to the sentencing court. When a circuit court uses the word court to differentiate among courts within a circuit, it can only be referring to its own branches. And when it uses the phrase writ of certiorari in criminal matters, it must include probation revocations. All certiorari petitions are civil actions. However, some arise from civil matters and some arise from criminal matters.
Doesn't that make that rule somewhat ambiguous?
I would say that it actually makes it very clear. Because when you talk about a certiorari review in a criminal matter, not a criminal action, but a criminal subject matter, you're clearly referring to things that arise from criminal cases, which a probation revocation certainly does. And in fact, I think the state's reading of it would actually render it completely meaningless. It would be referring to nothing. So review of probation revocations are clearly writs of certiorari in criminal matters. And this circuit court rule directed that this writ be reviewed in Branch 2, where Mr. Drew was convicted and sentenced. Because the Marathon County Circuit Court violated its own rule, Mr. Drew should be granted the remedy of having his writ heard in the proper branch, which is Branch 2 of the Marathon County Court.
Mr. Drill have, if he had been assigned to Branch 2, could he have substituted out of Branch 2?
I believe that the civil rules would apply there. Yes, he could have.
Well, if the Johnson versus Katie, or that case, talked about the court of conviction, you mean the petitioner could have just wiped out a Supreme Court decision in effect and said, well, I want a different judge now?
Well, that's a legislative decision. The substitution rules are enacted by the legislature. Generally, I think in this case, they are more broad, and Johnson versus Katie addresses this issue in a more narrow way. And I think that these two areas are shared by the legislature and the court. I'm going to move on. The Court of Appeals looked at this issue in a broader context when it ruled that the language in Johnson versus Katie clearly requires that a probationer who has been revoked must have his or her probate petition reviewed in the same branch of the circuit court in which he or she was convicted. The court correctly rejected the state's claim that the Johnson court actually meant county when it used the term court. And it pointed out that the Johnson court could have directed reviews to the circuit court in the county of conviction, but it did not.
Did Katie use circuit court? I mean, at the time it was written, as you've already heard, in 71, it was a dual county circuit court level, and they handled different aspects.
Right, and it could have said circuit court to specify circuit court versus county court. However, it used the term court of conviction.
Right.
And it's our argument that that is common usage of the term court of conviction to specify the very court, the precise branch where someone was convicted. It's also our position that this is supported by statutory definition. And though the statutes do not specifically address this precise, narrow issue, I would direct the court's attention to section 753.061 sub 1, which defines the branches of the circuit courts, and it supports the conclusion of the Court of Appeals. The statute states that each judgeship shall be given a branch number, and each branch constitutes a circuit court. Each branch is, in fact, a court. For example, Mr. Drow was convicted in Branch 2. According to this statute, Branch 2 is a court, Branches 1 and 3 are courts. But when one asks, what is the court of conviction, one would be referring to Branch 2.
Well, you mentioned that you're going to get to the policy, public policy. I don't want to move you ahead quicker than perhaps you want to, but what is the real policy? Why, understanding now that we have a single-level trial court, that is, we have rotation, all of these other things that have been mentioned, and you have the right of substitution. What's the real policy behind what you would like this court to find?
I believe that the policy disagreements between Mr. Drow's position and the state come down to basically two questions. The first being, can the circuit courts adhere to an administrative scheme that requires this rule? And the second, more important question is, should they adhere to such a scheme? I'll again address the questions in reverse order. Why should courts direct cert petitions to the branch where the person was convicted? In a general sense, it's more efficient for the judicial system to direct these reviews to the branch where the judge is familiar with the case.
You see, that's what I'm saying. If you have the judge rotated out of that, and it would be true if you're looking, and more true maybe if you're looking at a county that had one judge, but when you have these multiple judges, you may have a different judge, there's no guarantee.
Well, as the state pointed out, in the counties where the branches rotate, the judge actually stays with the branch. So if you direct the cert petitions to the same branch, you're most likely to get the same judge because the judge stays with the branch. it might be a different situation. If the judge rotated out of that branch, then you're less likely to get the same judge.
It's frequent, however, that the judge may have retired, may have resigned, may no longer be a judge. So there's no guarantee you're going to get the same judge that handled the sentencing and placed the person on probation.
Of course. Of course. And that's the case in every type of case, at every level, no matter what. You know, no judge stays in a particular branch forever. It's our position, however, that the judge is able to make a more informed decision, and it's a more efficient system to direct it to the same branch, to get that judge whenever it is possible.
Well, this is a paper review, basically. What's happening with the writ of certiorari is the judge is looking at the record of the administrative revocation hearing. How does it help if you've been the sentencing judge? What's the difference?
Well, we recognize that it's not a de novo review, and it's not an evidentiary review. However, this review still requires that the reviewing court exercise its judgment in determining whether there was evidence to support the revocation and whether it was unreasonable to revoke that person. That can only benefit from having an informed judge. To go into it in a little more detail, as we discussed in our brief, judges often use probation as a rehabilitative tool to accomplish a particular purpose with an individual defendant. Alcohol treatment is a very common example of this. If a probation officer chooses to revoke a probationer because he participated in a different type of treatment than the officer wanted him to, or the probation officer ordered the probationer to participate in a category of treatment that seems totally unrelated to the sentence, it's in the best interest of justice to direct that the certiorari review be performed by the judge who knew the purposes behind the sentence and was trying to effectuate those purposes in this case.
Ms. McDavid, if I just could interrupt you a minute. Which branch was the conviction in this case?
Conviction and sentencing were both in branch
two. Okay, both. Okay, because you said sentencing. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You know, whichever judge reviews a certiorari petition must use his or her judgment of what is arbitrary or unreasonable. Otherwise, this would be simply a rubber stamp of the Division of Hearings and Appeals decision in every revocation. However, it's our position that this judgment should be as informed as possible whenever possible. The second issue in terms of policy is the capability question. And it's true that every administrative system is burdensome. For any certiorari petition, some court must review the petition, and some administrative employee must assign it to a branch. The state has not shown why this system is any more burdensome than any other. It's actually more efficient for the same judge to review the case than assign it to a judge who has never seen it and must develop a familiarity with it. It's also more efficient for the case to go to the same branch than to take the time to weigh which new branch should take it. Marathon County decided this procedure was possible. We also offered the example of Dane County, which routes its sentencings after revocation back to the same judge, unless that judge is no longer sitting at all, whether the judge has a criminal calendar or felony calendar anymore or not. Clearly, circuit courts make these choices without the system grinding to a halt. The bottom line in this case is that Mr. Drew's revocation review should have occurred in Branch 2, not Branch 3 of the Marathon County Circuit Court.
Now, was that a violation of Marathon County's own rules when it was heard in Branch 3?
Yes, I believe it was.
Just putting it on the record. Thank you.
This is supported by the ruling in Johnson. The statutory definition supports it, policy considerations, and most directly, the specific court rules which applied in the county where Mr. Drew was convicted. The Court of Appeals' conclusion in this case was correct. This court can uphold this ruling on a narrow basis or on a broad one, but in either instance, Mr. Drew should be granted the remedy of having his petition reviewed in the proper branch in Marathon County.
Ms. McDavid, when the state sends out a notice to someone telling them that they're able to get a review of the administrative decision, what does that notice tell the person who's been revoked?
I am unable to answer that question, not having been involved in this case before.
Does the record in this particular case contain the notice?
Not that I remember, but it's possible that it did. Are there
no further questions, Ms. McDavid? Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. McGee?
Sorry, I dropped my pen earlier on. I have just a few additional comments that I'd like to make. First of all, this is, of course, a rule of administration of circuit court proceedings and does not necessarily inure to a particular right that a petitioner may have in having his petition heard in a particular branch of a circuit court. Secondly, while it may be true that different arguments may be advanced for a particular issue, in this case, this petitioner was represented by counsel in the trial court, and the issue was not raised. The trial court was not given the opportunity to correct its own mistake and thereby avoid an appellate review of this particular issue. And the state does take a position that, therefore, according to the rules of waiver of various issues, that this was waived.
What was it raised for the first time?
The petitioner acted pro se. Mr. Drow acted pro se when he filed his appeal in the appellate court, and he raised it himself at that point in time. There is nothing that indicates that it was considered by the trial court and a decision made on this issue.
So it was raised the first time in the Court of Appeals, not at the trial court?
Insofar as the language of Johnson is concerned, not necessarily, not the issue having to do with the circuit court rules.
Ms. McGee,
yes.
While we got you interrupted, if we accepted your premise that it should be decided by each circuit as to which court would get it, is it right here that Marathon County had a rule and that it wasn't followed in this case?
Well, it depends on what that rule actually meant. Certainly we've indicated that there was some ambiguity there, but if indeed it did mean that petitions for writs of certiorari to review probation and parole revocation should be in the particular branch where the person was convicted, then that did not occur in this case.
Where in your brief is the exact language of the rule? I'm sorry.
Of the Marathon County rule?
Yes.
I believe that's in the reply of the...
In your reply brief?
Or in the appendix? Page 7 of the reply brief.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
And finally, I did...
Before we get to finally, if in fact we find that the language is not ambiguous and that Ms. McDavid is correct and that they violated their own rule, do you lose?
No, because this is not necessarily a right that adheres to the petitioner. It's just a rule of administration, and if they violated their own rule, well, it's not necessarily, depends on what the sanctions are for violating rule, but not necessarily that this particular petitioner trial gets to go back and have it heard again. And I would like to say, with respect to the comments regarding the efficiency or burdensomeness of any particular interpretation of this, that's the whole point in terms of allowing the individual circuits or circuit court administrations to determine what will be the best way. And each has developed different rules prior to this time with respect to post-conviction motions and who's going to have them assigned and which judge is going to get them, and that allows them the flexibility. One last little point in terms of a record review versus a review or a new factual determination. When a circuit court judge in sentencing a convicted person to probation, or putting them on probation rather, determines that certain types of treatment is necessary, it then becomes the responsibility of the Department of Corrections, a supervising agency, to determine how that treatment is going to be carried out. And this would not allow a reviewing judge, if that judge had been the person to the judge to put the person on probation, to determine that the treatment had been improper, or it was later than they wanted them to have it, or earlier than they wanted them to have it. That has to be within the purview of the Department of Corrections. My time is up. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. McGee. Thank you, Ms. McDavid. That ends our hearing on this case. I remind the Berlin High School students and the Faith Christian School students to remain here to meet with Justice Steinmetz. They will be joined by the Waukesha South High School students.